Intertextual Cardboard Experience.
Hello, and welcome to Intertextual Cardboard Experience, where we have a special celebratory 30th episode and first ever two-time guest, Daniel Newman. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Ryan. Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming on and kind of, well, suggesting this. So a little bit of context as to why this episode is special. I did mention that it's the 30th guest episode, which is awesome. First ever two-time guest. And the main reason that this conversation manifested is to recap the first ever Indie Games Night Market. And it can kind of serve as an extra holiday present for the podcast. So I'm just super excited to dive in. But
yeah, right on. No, I think it's cool to kind of do a like a debrief, I guess, of how things went with Night Market.
Yeah. There's like definitely so much that we can talk about. We already did talk for a good like 10 minutes. So
I was like, wait, we should be recording this. Why are we recording this? Let's go.
We had to pause that and start this. But the first thing that I'm gonna kind of get you with is that there has been like a good amount of chatter or discourse about the event in various places.
Yeah.
A chief one being Discord. So before we kind of get started, I've got a goofy question for you.
Sure.
And that's, what's a kind of question or topic that you don't want to discuss regarding Indie Games Night Market?
Oh, jeez. Oh, man. So it's tricky, right? Like, we've done it once. It was kind of a test, a pilot program. And there are clearly like the refinements that need to be made for the next one. But I'm also taking a lot of cues from PAX, who's really hosting the event, right? Like, I set it up. I set up the applications and I kind of selected who was going to do it. But like, in terms of the physical event, like, PAX is really in charge of that. So like, there have been some things that they've suggested that I'm just going to go with because they know how to run these big events. And there's, you know, we've been talking about stuff on the PGC Discord. And like, there's just some things that I can't budge on because it's coming from PAX. And I've been trying to be clear about that. So when that stuff comes up, I'm just kind of like, okay, guys, I get it. I know there, you know, things like not having reservations, not taking reservations, which caused some confusion in people lining up. If they'd already made reservations, they didn't know why they had to stand in line. And like, I get that. But at the same time, like, we needed to have it be pretty organized because way more people showed up than we expected. So PAX has asked that designers not take reservations next year, which I understand, but there's already been some pushback. We'll see how that shakes out. But like, generally, you know, I'm happy to have conversations, but if there's something that's coming from PAX, I kind of have to go with their recommendations because they're the ones that are actually managing the event itself. So that would be my answer, long-winded as it was.
You get to kind of like, not blame, because again, PAX is doing all the work, but hey,
it's not me, guys, come on. You know, no. So like, we could discuss it all you want, but like, if PAX says we got to do it this way, then we got to do it that way, right? But there's other things like not having it be a snake all the way through, like that we can change. We could have that be a little more open because there was some confusion. People thought that it was one way only, and then the folks at the front of line maybe got, you know, overlooked or whatever. So there's definitely like, there's ways to tweak things a little bit, but yeah, no, I'm happy to have discussions about stuff, but there are certain things that like, they're coming from PAX and that's what they say we got to do, so we got to do it.
No, that makes a ton of sense. Depending on your answer, I was going to be like, oh, I guess we've got nothing left to talk about for the rest of our conversation, but no.
That's right. I'm open to nothing. No changes. No, it's all good.
No, cool. But yeah, no, I do have another preface. So I kind of talked about why this interview is special, but I just wanted to extend a huge, multifaceted thank you to you.
Oh.
So like, personally, I've been kicking around design ideas for a bit. I mean, like, I think a lot of people who like board games do that type of thing. There's like plenty of ideas that I come up with that I just like toss away completely, but I always have like a few that I at least keep the doc open for and I'm like poking around on. But I mean, nonetheless, I definitely would not have like settled down and gotten through one if it wasn't for the event. So
yeah, that's awesome. I've heard that from a few people, which is super exciting to hear. Like, just more opportunities for people to work on their like weird ideas and like make a handful of copies and see who wants it, right? Like, that was the whole reason for doing it. So I'm really glad to hear that it kind of helped push you to get it
Yeah.
out the door like that.
Yeah, I mean, again, it would have just been like kicking around forever. Well, not forever, but maybe this one would have been kicked around forever or not even happened, but I'm really happy that I got to do it.
Yeah, it's
And
awesome.
thanks for coming on and chatting, because I wrote in the little indie game night market forum thread on the PGC Discord that you mentioned that I did like a personal debrief of this. And for the podcast, I've done like a handful now of just like solo things, and I know that they get like rambly and they're wild. I mean, like, I try to throw some giveaways or fun incentives, and I think that like ultimately there wind up being some good ideas in them, but I knew this one was going to be rough. And I
Yeah.
kept like pushing it off because of that, and it wound up just being like an hour and a half, and I'm like, okay, this
Oh no.
I'm like this is not going to exist for anyone
That's hilarious.
unless I start like a Patreon or something, be like, you want the reject crap?
Yeah, I think sometimes you do just need someone else to bounce the things off of, right? Or you can just kind of go into a tunnel like hyper focus on a certain thing and just yeah, it gets away from you. So no, I'm happy to come on and help you work through
Yes.
those thoughts.
Yeah. And yeah, I got them off my chest, so I feel good. But yeah, I'm glad that you're like, yeah, I'll come on and chat about that.
Yeah,
So
sure.
awesome. Okay. So now preface is over. But I know that a main inspiration of running this event and setting it up was to bring something like the Tokyo Game Market to the States. I've never been to a Tokyo Game Market, so I just kind of want to ask you about your experiences, like the times you've gone there. Have you primarily gone as like a seller, publisher, customer, both?
So,
Just reflecting on your experiences there, I guess, is the short of it.
So I've gone 3 times now, and just because of timing, it's all been in the last calendar year, which is kind of nuts, having never gone to Asia at all. And then suddenly I go to Tokyo 3 times in a year. My first trip, I had brought copies of Enemy Anemone, and I had made a couple of friends on Twitter. And like, so there was a guy who was going to let me kind of share his booth and sell some copies. I didn't really advertise very well that I was going to be there, so I wound up not selling very many, and kind of being stuck at the booth, which was not super fun. But it was a really cool experience, and I was really grateful that somebody let me be part of their booth and all that. But also one of the main reasons I went was to pick up games that I could buy like 20 or 30 of each, and then bring them back and sell them to folks in the US, because it can be very difficult to get some of these games unless you know how to do like the importing, or you wait for something to get republished by another publisher. So I wanted to go and bring stuff back and sell it, which also basically paid for my trip. And that was so successful that I decided that I could probably do that every 6 months at, every time there is a Tokyo Game Market. Like stuff sold out within minutes, which was nuts. So now that's just something I do twice a year, is go with one suitcase, buy a second suitcase while I'm in Japan, fill them both with games, bring them back and sell them. And now I'm like extending my trips, so I'm not going just for Game Market. I like to pick somewhere else in Japan to kind of hang out for a week or so, and just experience this other culture and this other place. And it's like I look forward to it so much. And as soon as I come back, I'm like, okay, when do I get to go back? Let me make my plans for the next one. So yeah, so now it's this weird mix of like, I bring some things to sell. And this last one, I brought some stuff and had another publisher sell them for me, which freed me up to experience the convention a little better. But then also, like get my stuff out there, and I'm building these relationships. And now, so I had 150 copies of Gachapon Trick, that were sold by Sunnybird, which is a publisher in Japan who is working to bring some like US and European games over, which is cool. And then I came back and he was like, can I get more? So I wound up doing another print run of Gachapon Trick and Agency. And most of them are going to go to Sunnybird to sell into other game stores there as well. So he's actually acting as a distributor. So it's been cool seeing my presence kind of develop and grow there. It's now at a point where I get stopped occasionally to get autographs and selfies, which is just like I'm still dealing with that. It's really strange. But yeah, so it's been kind of cool. Like, and because I keep going back, people now kind of expect to see me there, and like they know I'm coming back. So anyway, that was rambly. But Tokyo Game Market's awesome. the
Oh,
end.
very, very cool. I think it's neat too. Like I didn't really think about it until you brought it up, but what was the publisher that is kind of selling your games over there again?
Sunnybird.
Sunnybird. Okay,
So
yeah.
Sunnybird also bring they, I think he they have a deal with Freedom and Frieza and to F-Spiele. So they've been bringing over and localizing a lot of his games, which is super cool. And he's going to be publishing a copy of my or a Japanese edition of my game, London Acropolis Railway, at some point. It's been kind of in the works for a while, hopefully this year, this next year. So he's working on bringing over a bunch of games from outside Japan and introducing them to a Japanese audience, which is super cool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's cool because I mean, like what you're doing both with just going to Tokyo Game Market and bringing games back to sell, other people doing similar things in various ways through like different sites and the fact that it's happening like everywhere. So, like in Japan, they're localizing, like European and English things. So it's just, I don't know, the kind of the interconnectedness and ability to like find more and get it into more people's hands
Totally.
is growing, and that's
Totally.
really
It's
neat.
really cool to see this, like, intercultural sharing and all of that. It's really neat. And that's really fun to be part of.
Yeah, that's slick. So, obviously, the idea of, being like a little more kind of creative and willing to take risks in independent design is something to like want to enjoy and emulate, like about the Tokyo Game Market with Indie Games Night Market. So I guess what's kind of like the overall ethos of the event that you really like want to capture with like Indie Game Night Market like this year and kind of like moving forward, everything like that. Like what?
So one of the frustrating things about like the US and European board game scene is it's all so publisher driven, right? Like designers, the only way to get their games out there, you have two options, right? You can either pitch to a publisher and they take care of everything and you're not really a part of it once you hand over your prototype or whatever. Sometimes you're involved in some of the development, but usually they have in-house folks. And so you kind of like, I'm going to let you do this. You're going to give me a little bit of money, but now it's all on you. Or you do the Kickstarter route, right? Where you do it yourself, you're responsible for everything. But to do it, you're going to have to really market, and that's a whole other skill. And you're going to really, if you want to make any money, you have to print a ton of them. And there's a lot of risk involved with printing that many, right? So finding this other path that it was interesting because the way I started New Mill wound up being very similar to how folks do things in Japan with like Tokyo Game Market and everything, where it's like, well, I'm just going to do a few. I'm going to make it available to who wants it, and then that's it, and I'll just move on to the next thing. And then once I went to Tokyo Game Market and I was like, oh my God, these are just the designers at their booth. They've made their game themselves. Sometimes the art's really nice, sometimes the production's great, sometimes it's not that interesting, and it's just like, but the game itself is cool, and you don't really care that the art is kind of, it's not, they're not ugly necessarily, but they may not be as like super shiny and fancy that we're used to in the US, right? So seeing that there's this whole scene that's doing everything the way that made sense for me when I started my little company was like, it's so reassuring, and I can't think of the word, but it just like made me go, oh yeah, this is totally a viable way to do things. And then to bring that attitude and that feeling back and like encourage folks here to also try to just be like, yeah, you don't have to sell 10,000 copies to be successful, right? Like if you make 40 copies of something and there are 40 people who want them, like that feels awesome. You got your game out there. There are people who are enjoying your game. Like it doesn't have to be this massive hit. And yeah, so being able to like bring that attitude and just designers selling their things to people who are excited to see it, like I find that just so rewarding.
Yeah. Overall, I have a bunch of questions for you, so I don't want to like jump in too much, but I guess, from my side of things, it being, well, literally my first thing that I created, I really wanted to lean into like the independentness of it. Obviously, there are many people who helped in one way or the other, which is like beyond appreciated. I tried to like even make the font in my rule book in the thanks section bigger. Like, thank you to all these people for sure. But yeah, I wanted to lean into like the independentness of it. I obviously ran into things that I wouldn't do like differently, but I'm glad that I definitely learned from. And I didn't really like put a ton of like advertising. I'm not like an advertiser anyway, but I had the description on I mean, you put the description from like what I submitted on like Newmill the day before PAX started, or it's like no, it's Friday morning. So the day before Indie Game Night Market, I just made like a video and put that
Oh, cool.
on our Discord, and it was like just 10 minutes, like, ah, oh, this is what the game's about. And like, I don't know, there are people that would have like a handful of games like on a list, like a piece of paper or their phone, and they'd be like, oh yeah, I came here for this game. I was like,
That's awesome.
like, you sure?
Really? Did you write that down right?
But yeah, I don't know. It definitely made the experience like fun, and I mean, everything about the experience was fun, but it just, I don't know. There's like a lot of moments like that where like, oh yeah, this is not just like a legitimate way to sell games, but it's a different way to do it, and one that is brings a different kind of feeling and reward, I
Yeah,
think. So.
totally. And it's so much more personal, right? Like it's just you and the person who wants to play your game. Like you don't have this intermediary of a publisher or anything. So like it's really awesome. Like at Tokyo Game Market, every once in a while I would buy a game and they would just be like, "How did you find out about this game?" And I was like, "Oh, well, on Twitter." It's like, "Oh." Like they were so excited that somebody from the US was there and they wanted to buy their game because it's just people just selling their stuff the same way as Indie Game Market. So yeah, no, it's having that real personal interaction is like so much different than like going to a game store and buying something from somebody who like you don't know, right?
Yeah, like I said, I mean, I guess I don't have any other experience in doing it, and I'm sure like there are different things that will hopefully make me happy in different like avenues in the future,
Sure.
but this, I don't know. I couldn't have asked for like a better first experience.
Oh, that's
So.
awesome. I'm so happy to hear that.
Awesome. Okay, so yeah, this is actually like a good transition too, based on what I had, but you set up the event, ran the event, and you also had a table there as well. You brought the two games, you mentioned them, Agency and Gachapon Trick, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. So I guess the question then is, what about those two games felt like good selections to you for this indie night, as opposed to having it just, I'm putting in air quotes, like be like a pre-order release through your site?
So those two games kind of came late in my planning and I didn't really have a spot for them in my like normal cycle. And they were also both pretty weird compared to the other stuff I was doing. Like and Gachapon Trick I made specifically to launch at Tokyo Game Market. That was the first time I sold it, and it's a very Japanese game. It's about Gachapon, which is a kind of phenomenon in Japan, these kind of capsule toys where you put your money in, you turn the dial, and the toy you get, you're not exactly sure what it's going to be. So it's this kind of fun gamble of like, oh, what am I going to get? Am I going to get the one I want? And you need coins or tokens or something, and I did not sell it with the game. So it's a little odd in terms of like you have to buy it, but you're not going to get everything included. Which I think in Japan is probably less of a big deal. Here it could have been a little tougher. And I wasn't sure how well it was going to do for that reason. And then Agency, similarly, it's four players only, partnerships, and you need card racks in order to play it. Like you cannot play it without them, but I'm not selling them with it. So again, like it made it a kind of a stranger product to just throw up on the site and be like, yeah, just buy this game. And that one I sold for the first time at Indie Games Night Market. Like it was specifically, I wanted to launch it there. And I'm using smaller boxes for both of them. I charged a little less for them. So I wanted them to be the special things outside of like kind of the standard Newmill products. But yeah, I think just because they were both like not incomplete, but like required things that I wasn't selling, it felt like they fit better for the kind of indie game night market kind of scene. And I
Yeah.
didn't want it to just be like Numill stuff. Like a couple people asked about, like, can they buy other games that I'm selling? I was like, no, I'm just selling these two. Like everything else you can buy from the website, but like this is specifically like Indie Games Night Market specific.
Yeah, that's awesome. That makes a lot of sense. And yeah, we kind of chat about it a little bit before too. But yeah, the kind of like what to potentially include or not in the game was something that I was kind of like grappling with. So I
Yeah.
guess like a funny anecdote was initially I wanted to have so like probably for my game design, like the most inconsequential thing is just like putting tokens on like the scoring card. So every player has like six tokens, and if you are able to like score at the end of round for a particular ingredient, you literally just put the token on a card. And I'm like, oh, like I'm gonna make resin pieces, like custom resin pieces. And then I'm like doing the math, and well, first off, again, just things kept trickling down and pushing that back. And I'm like, I'm not gonna make over 1,000 resin pieces
Yeah, no, that's
that
nuts.
have no purpose in the game like whatsoever.
Yeah.
So I feel bad. I like bugged. Well, I'll say it. It was in my thank you. There's like a little fake anecdote. I bugged designer publisher John Cloudis because
Oh, sure.
he actually did a really cool game that kind of flew under the radar that has this vibe. It's called Sandstone. So he made like custom resin pieces for this like card-based abstract game, which is really
Okay.
slick. I like it. And I think he made like 80 or 100 copies and just sold them, and that was like it through his site. And because of that's kind of what inspired me to want to do that. But I'm like, I'll do it again in the future, just not for this.
Yeah, you do an oversized sandwich deluxe down the
But
road.
yeah, no kidding. But I guess I didn't even have this written into like my ideas, but kind of based on that and based on some of the things that we were talking about a little bit too, you've mentioned that kind of like the gaming market or what maybe the customer comes to expect in the States, like when it comes to game product, is potentially a little bit different. So I guess, like I don't know if like a huge consumer cultural shift is going to happen, but what's something that you think can come about from events like Indie Game Night Market that really winds up lending the product to be a little bit different or having the purchaser need to have like X components or do this or really kind of even like play with that format. I guess what's some of the things that you're like potentially hoping for or think positively could come out of this?
Yeah, sure. One of the things I find frustrating with the current US scene is how much priority is put on things being like really fancy, right? Like people want a box of toys in order to consider it a good game, right? They want the art to be gorgeous. They want custom meeples with different things. And like, it's almost like they're evaluating the stuff more than the game itself, which like is fine. Like people are allowed to like that stuff, but all that stuff is expensive, and it can stop a lot of games that could be very interesting from being made or even played, right? If it doesn't look super pretty, they're gonna dismiss it, and that's frustrating. And I think that can stop some people from being able to realize their ideas if they're not able to make them super pretty. So I feel like having more weird kind of handmade stuff, or getting, I don't think we're going to get to a point really here where somebody's going to get excited to buy a sheet of rules, which there was at least one person at Indie Games Night Market who was selling just a sheet of rules, and you play with a standard deck of cards, and he was even selling, it was Rand, you could even, he had standard decks of cards that you could buy to go with the game if you wanted to, which I thought was really fun. You just got a bunch of weird ones from eBay or something. So I, and I don't think it did that well for him, that one, because that's a really hard left when folks are coming to a show like PAX Unplugged and seeing these massive booths. They're spending tons of money on great art and components and all this stuff. And like to hold those two things up together is a shock, right? But if we have more of these events, and we have more of these, more folks selling these things that are really unique and have really interesting ideas that you might not be seeing in all these other big, deluxe games or whatever, people might have a little more, it might not seem as weird that that's an option, right? And that's what I'm hoping, is that we can kind of broaden the idea of like what's an interesting game, what is worth playing, what are our expectations for what a game should look like? I feel like if that could be broadened, that would make me really happy.
Yeah, I don't know. For some reason, when you're talking, it just kind of made me think, like, yeah, it seems like, like the potential customer base or the consumer in the States is kind of odd because, I mean, well, from a production standpoint, something like Button Shy Games, which I have a ton of Button Shy Games, I love them, and they look, I mean, they look fantastic. So if we're talking about like art or graphic design, like you're not getting like a extremely polished product with those, you are, but like people will kind of talk about how much they do love them, me included, for the form factor, it only being 18 cards, and then experimenting with the design based on that. But again, it's like 18 cards, and then we kind of like hold different standards for different products
Totally.
then. So
Totally. And Button Shy was definitely like a big influence when we started Numel. There are other folks that are doing kind of indie stuff. Like, I'm not saying we invented that or anything, but like Button Shy and Amabel Holland and Matt Fantastic and like what he's been doing. And like, there's plenty of folks out there, but they're not getting the recognition necessarily that like a Stonemaier is, right? Or stuff like that. Like the folks who are making these big games. So yeah, there's definitely room for it. And there are folks that are doing it successfully, but it's a different scale. And it's always going to be a different scale. Like, bringing more indie games into the scene is not going to make people less interested in the big fancy games, but maybe some of those folks will also get interested in smaller stuff, right? That's the hope.
yeah, I think that's a good hope. I mean, again, yeah, good games can be good games, no matter what their form factor. And sometimes you can, I mean, a lot of times you can use that form factor to really like dig into the unique elements of that particular design too, so.
Absolutely. My first published design was with Button Shy. And it was like, can I make kind of a tight economic euro in 18 cards? Like, that was the challenge that I set myself. And that was really exciting. So, yeah, no, I think Button Shy is still doing a bunch of cool stuff. And yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, hopefully, yeah, just kind of like an overall shift to willingness and seeing that exist in different ways will keep sparking creativity and this excitement amongst everybody in the gamosphere.
Yeah, totally.
Awesome. Okay, so Indie Games Night Market, whether this was like the first one, which it was, or the 10th, was like fantastic. I mean, like the turnout was huge. What, again, I think you've kind of capped like the number as at least like 500 or 600, because
So they stopped counting at like 430 or something, around 8:30. Because he hadn't eaten dinner and he needed to go get dinner. I was like, yeah, that's totally fine. So yeah, I would say we probably had at least 500 people come through, which was just way beyond what I was expecting. I mean, I really had no idea. I was like, 20 people could show up or 200 people could show up. Like, I just had no idea. But yeah, I would say probably at least 500 came through the doors there.
Yeah, that's crazy. I when setting up, I think it may have been like 6:30 or so, if I'm not mistaken. I just, took a picture of the line that was
It was already a
already
huge
there.
line. Yeah, it was nuts. There were people lining up at like a quarter to six when we weren't opening until 7. Like, yeah, I was shocked.
Yeah, so I mean, definitely a success quote, like I think on your site, it says a wild success.
Yeah.
And so what's like a bit of feedback from designers, that general feedback, not like necessarily even positive, negative, that you didn't like expect or think would have come from the event?
That's tough. I mean, I've heard from a few people that like the event actually pushed them to finish designs that they had been kicking around for a while. And that's probably my favorite thing I've heard from folks, that it was the reason that they decided to go ahead and make something. So that was super cool. For the event itself, I think, one of the struggles was because of the way we had laid out the booths, and that was kind of a snaking path. It was unclear to customers that it wasn't just a one-way thing. So I think folks at the front and at the end had a little anxiety about, are they going to run out of money before they get to me? Or are they going to rush past me because I'm at the front because they want to see everything else? And I think because of that, we're going to try to make it kind of more obvious that once you're in and you can wander around and you don't have to just take like this snaking path. So I think from that feedback, that concern, I think is helpful to kind of reinforce like, how it actually works once you go in. Is that which kind of what you were looking for? Or
I'm just trying to think. Like, I guess for me, like from like being there, one of the things that I wasn't gonna try to do was like go and like talk and buy games before. I would have felt really bad about that. And that's like honestly for me, it was like the only thing. I was kind of like when I saw the initial snake, I'm like okay, like. Every all these awesome designs in front of me are going to sell out, so I'm going to get like the people who just are getting, but not in like a bad way. I'm like this is great. Like people got money, they came to the event, they're gonna buy my game. I was like in like a weird like confidence spot where like I expected to sell games due to the event, but at the same time I was like, am I really going to sell any games? Like I don't know. It was just like a very
Did you wind up selling everything you brought?
yeah yep
Oh, that's awesome.
I brought 40 copies and I sold all of them. So,
That's awesome. I'm so glad. But
yeah.
I know that was a concern, especially for folks at the back or folks who, because there are some people there who had a bit of a higher profile, right? Like Jonathan Cox from John Gets Games was there, and Chris Ray, who does a lot for the Trick Taking Guild on BGG, and like as part of Opinionated Gamers, and Taylor, obviously, Taylor's Trick Taking Table. So like, and I tried to spread folk. I mean, I didn't do any. I put them in alphabetical order, but it did wind up kind of spreading them out, right? When I chose, because I chose who was going to be involved, there was like 26 applicants, and we wound up with 20, and two had to drop kind of last minute. I took all the names off before I like when I made the spreadsheet, because I didn't want it to just be like, oh, these are my friends, they're going to be in, right? So I was really happy once I put the names back on that there were folks that I had never heard of that I didn't know, right? And then I was giving folks a chance to sell their stuff. So I'm glad that it wound up working out, and that people didn't spend all their money before they got to
No, I
you.
mean, yeah, like that was I didn't have like any fear. Again, I was in this place, like this weird place where I'm like again, I expect to sell something, but like I don't know what, and I'm fine with like any kind of outcome. And I was just thinking like, yeah, if people like sell out early, like hey, I still exist. I'm here. Come come buy my game. But
I think just about everybody sold out too, which was super cool to see. I brought like a ton of stuff just because like I could drive and like I have another way to sell it, so I was able to, I produced more, so I just brought more. But I even sold out. I didn't sell out. I sold way more than I expected,
yeah, that's awesome.
which was really cool.
Yeah, I guess I don't know if this is like good feedback for me or for anybody. The one thing I think that I don't, again, I don't know if it was like a mistake because ultimately the people who were interested wound up asking if I had copies was I think there was like a lot of expectation in that later crowd that things were like sold out or were going to be for or something like that. And kind of with the way that I had a like a busier table, like I put out the art pieces that I made.
Oh, that's cool.
Eric was helping demo the game to the side, so we kind of had like the three like shared rows for the game, and he was helping like talk people through that a lot. And if he was like talking to a group, I might talk to another group about that too. But I didn't like because they were in bags, I kind of kept like my box of the bags on the ground, so there were like there wasn't like a stack that like wound up like
Right.
starting and going down. So I think a lot of people did ask, like, oh, like do you have any left? I'm like, yeah, I got like eight left, nine left, or
Right, 'cause you didn't
whatever it
have on the
was at the
table, so they
time.
weren't
So
sure. Yeah.
yeah, I don't know. I mean, again, if I were to do something like this in the future, there are things that I would like. There's actually, I don't want to like, I don't want to throw my thoughts out on the table, not because I'm afraid of them getting stolen, because I have some weird stuff going up in here. I don't really care,
Okay.
but it's more
Yeah.
like I don't want to like in terms of like a selection process. I don't want to be like, hey, I think if I were to be in like IGNM next year, this is like the pitch I would have, and you read it and be like, oh yeah, that's Ryan's.
No, it's fine. I'll forget. My memory's terrible now.
All right. But yeah, I guess like the short, like vague thing is like if I did something like this again, I really want to experiment kind of with like the form of the event itself to like influence how the product is kind of like created and purchased.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Chris Ray actually wanted to have a survey for people to fill out about basically create a game based on customer feedback. But I don't think enough people really did it. So it didn't quite work out. Or maybe it was he wanted the vendor, like the designers, to have an, I don't remember what it was, but he had some idea that reminded me of that, that where he was like, make this kind of meta game based on, the other folks that are around. But that's, yeah, it's a cool idea. And yeah, hopefully next time, I definitely, we got the approval to expand, kind of generally for next time. So it's going to be more tables. They're going to be smaller tables so we can fit more people. But yeah, it should be bigger. It should be even bigger next time, which I'm really excited about.
Yeah, that's awesome. And oh yeah, I don't know. You're talking about like Chris's survey. I guess one of, like I said, my table is kind of crazy. So I just wanted like a sign up sheet. I wasn't going to make people like join a mailing list because I don't really have anything to mail out. But
Yeah.
if I guess like the only thing that I didn't really like talk about a ton, and I wanted people to know, is that if they did purchase a game, that I do want to make other different designs like with that deck too, and then
Yeah,
just kind of
cool.
like shoot out
Or
the
like
rule
send them
book.
new rules. Yeah, that's
Yeah.
awesome. That's a great idea.
That was really about it, but I didn't even, and I wanted to do, because the game was like about sandwiches, I just wanted to like survey and see like what people's favorite sandwich was.
Yeah.
And my wife made like a cool sign up sheet, and I like literally didn't put it out on the table.
Oh no.
But I guess things are so busy anyway
Yeah.
between like talking to people, talking about the game, dealing with the transaction, that it could have just got lost in the shuffle anyway.
Well, you had two people at your table.
Yeah.
Like I was doing all that on my own, and I had two games, and I had them both out, and people wanted explanations of both of them, and they wanted to give me money, and they were trying to do Venmo, and I wanted to make sure the Venmo went through before they walked away. I don't think I only missed one person who said they paid, and then I never saw it. But so yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. And you've never dealt with like selling anything at a booth before?
No.
Yeah, no, it gets pretty wild. I was actually really happy that they kind of staged entry so you didn't get super overwhelmed. I would just get these packs of people come to my bed, or suddenly have like 8 to 10 people at my booth, and like they're all asking me questions, and I'm trying to explain the two different games, and I'm taking their money, and then I could stop and breathe for a second, and then another pack of people would come. Yeah, no, it gets pretty wild. So I'm not surprised that you had one thing that just didn't quite make it out there, but.
Yeah, it was definitely not a big deal. I just,
Yeah.
it was like, again, I wanted not necessarily the game itself, but I wanted like the table itself to be kind of like a little experience. And
Sure.
I did certain things like labeling, getting people's labels for the bag and stuff, which,
Yeah, I saw that on Taylor's video. That was really fun.
yeah, so I liked that. I just wanted to add like as much as I could to make it
Yeah.
fun. But yeah, again, no complaints, just me being a little goofy and scattered.
No, of
And
course. I mean,
missing the shit.
that's the great thing about this kind of format, is it allows people to be as goofy and scattered as they want, right? Like
Yep.
everybody has a little bit of their own feel to each, how they set up their booth. And like somebody had some kind of like balloon octopus at their table. Did you see that one?
Oh,
Like the
no, if I saw
hotel at
that.
the end of the universe, I think.
Oh, yeah, that
They were
game
like right
definitely intrigued
behind
me,
me,
but
but
that's awesome.
they had like some crazy octopus balloon or something. So I don't know. It's the room for creativity when you strip away all of the kind of standards that or expectations that people have is just like, I don't know, super fun to see.
Yeah, like I said, I'm definitely excited to see where it goes for sure too. Okay, so I asked about like feedback from designers. You mentioned some of the things that like PAX as a convention has talked to you about already. I guess like is there any bit of feedback that you got from PAX itself that you didn't necessarily like expect, or what was their kind of like reaction to how well it went, or anything in that realm?
I mean, they were super excited about how it went over. The biggest issue for them is storing the tables before the event. They only have so much space to kind of hide the stuff because the Q Hall, which is really the only logical place to have the event, is pretty much busy until 6 o'clock. Like that's where they do autograph signing, like the signings and stuff, and there's other events happening all day. So really the only time that's available is Saturday night at 7, and they need to be able to store the tables. So expanding, they're all for it, but then it's just like logistically, where do we put the stuff that we're going to need for the actual event, right? Which I hadn't really considered that because it's not something that I have to worry about. So just a little bit of negotiation there about like how, can you get the tables? Where are we going to keep them? How are we going to get them set up? Boring stuff like that. But otherwise, no, they were super jazzed because they didn't really know how it was going to go either. And the fact that it's a free event for both the vendors and the customers is like, it's super, super cool. Like there were people who asked if they needed to get a ticket for it. I was like, no, just get in line. So no, I think it's a really good partnership with them, and it made a lot of sense, especially for this first time. And I think we're going to continue to do it as long as people keep coming out for it. As long as there's interest, right?
Have to imagine that will be the case moving forward. I mean, not that, I don't know. I don't really get super hooked by like the FOMO-y stuff anymore. I mean, I've got,
Yeah.
well, the thing I'm trying to realize is like, if I have a fear of missing out, I have a fear of missing out on like the 100 unplayed games that I own.
Seriously.
It's just like I have all these experiences, like they exist, like I can make them happen if I really want
And like
to.
I miss playing games I've already played. Like there's so much I'm constantly bringing in that I'm like neglecting all of my babies that are already here. Right? Like I just look and I feel overwhelmed by how much I have on my shelves. I'm just like, I played that once, maybe twice, and like it's so good. Why am I not playing it more? Because I have 30 more games I just brought back from Japan that need to get played, right? FOMO is such a double-edged sword. Like, as an impulse, I kind of hate it, but at the same time, it's a lot of what's driving my business. So I can't hate it too much. But yeah, I don't want people to like go crazy worried they're gonna miss stuff. But I want people to be excited about seeing things that they may not see again, right? Like, so I want people to be excited, but not go nuts, if that's possible. Be excited, but don't feel terrible if you miss it. You know what I mean? Because there's going to be more stuff. There's always more stuff. Anyway.
That's kind of again, I don't have to, well, I don't deal with that on the business side of things really, but I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I'm just trying to like, grapple that with that as a human and
Oh, sure.
being
Oh, sure.
being fine. Like, yeah, I didn't I got a copy of Torchlit because there were some copies that went up quickly afterwards, and there are other things that I like want to try out and hopefully can from it, but
Yeah, I really wanted to like get a copy of everybody's, right? Like I was very excited, but I also didn't want I wanted customers, like the people standing in line to get the games, because they're the ones who are going to be able to talk about them and be excited about it. And so I didn't go around asking for games or buying games from folks, because I wanted it to spread out, right? If we all showed up and bought each other's games, there would be half as many games to go around. And like no, the event would be a flop. So like, yeah, sure, we all traded our own games, but what did we accomplish, right? So I did get a copy of Torchlit Trick, because I remember seeing him talk about it and showing the graphic design, and like I gave some feedback with the graphic design early on. So it was like really exciting to see that project develop. And as like a big trick-taking person, it looked really intriguing to me. So I did make sure I got a copy of that. I got a copy of Well, I bought the box and the rules for Mutation because Jonathan ran out of dice. He had more boxes than dice. Because if you, I don't you it, you probably never bought dice in bulk. But what happens is you get them, and some of them are just not usable. They'll get stuck together. They aren't painted correctly. Like, you just can't get those out. So you wind up buying a ton and then realizing you don't have as many as you actually need. So he had some extra boxes and rules. So I was like, I'll give you money for the box and rules. I'll just buy my own dice. I could get dice. It's fine. So I have a copy of that because that's not one he could have sold anyway, right? Just as the box. And then I got a copy of Rand's Baychella, which was just the rules in the Ziploc because he had plenty of those. But yeah, no, like, your game looked fascinating. Like, there's so many. The propaganda one where you're rolling dice and taking pictures. Do you see?
I don't know if I gotta
So
look this up now.
it's like a 3-player game, but one player is a judge, and I think it probably rotates. And so you're playing this game, and then you're taking photos of the board condition, but like selectively, trying to convince the judge that you're the one that needs to be assisted, whether or not you're actually winning. And just like as an idea, I thought that was wild. So I know I would have loved to come back with more of those, but it felt like my duty was to make sure other people got it, right? I think somebody even gave me a copy of their game, and I was like, no, like, you need to sell it. Like, I know you, I can probably get this another time. Like, but now I'm like kicking myself. I was like, oh, I really wish I kept it. That's how it goes.
Being able to talk to David with Torchlit was next to me, being able to talk to David, talk to you,
Yeah.
talk Jonathan sold out bef way before I did, so he came over and we chatted for a bit, so that was fun. And
Yeah.
yeah,
Well,
there's
he was right. Jonathan was right at the front of the line too. So, and has a big profile, right? Like, people know him from his YouTube channel he's been doing for years. So, I wasn't too surprised that those went fast.
Oh yeah, I mean, again, I'm not surprised that any of them went fast at all. I was pleasantly surprised that I sold all mine,
No,
and
I think that's great.
I'm happy. But okay, so I don't want this question to be like super redundant, because I feel like we've like chatted about this a bit. But I guess the other element too is that it's not going to necessarily just be Indie Games Night Market. There are going to be other independent board game like events that will be like popping up
Yeah,
more and more.
absolutely.
And I think there was, Game Market West happen as well, and that's going to happen again. And then Dice, I forgot the name of the Dice Tower one, Taylor just rattled off
What is he calling it? It's at Dice
it.
Tower West. I think it's just like Game
Game.
Market Vegas, maybe.
Okay.
I think it's Game Market Vegas, something like that. But no, that's super cool that he announced that. No, I love seeing all this stuff. Like, I don't need to own. It's not, I didn't even come up with this idea, right? Like, I'm borrowing it from Tokyo. So the fact that people are so excited and they want to do it other places, there's been talk of having one at BGG. Somebody was talking about doing one in their local, like, Midwest. I don't know if it was Grand Gamer Guild or sorry, what's the one in, oh, I forget which one it is, in Michigan.
I think that's Grand Gamer Guild. I think they're from Grand Rapids. I think.
Yeah, it's there's some convention in Grand
Oh, okay.
Rapids or something, Grand Con, I don't know. But so he was talking about maybe doing something there. Like, a lot of people are excited to kind of spread this idea, which I'm so thrilled about. Because really, I just want to foster the indie scene, right? Like, I want more people to be out there making cool stuff and selling it on their own. And that's great.
I guess I was just kind of thinking about that before when I like typed up my thoughts. I thought like, what are like you most excited about moving forward with all it? But we've kind of talked about all the neat like design spaces and opportunities that these types of events are going to foster anyway. So like the
Totally,
fact that they can
totally.
like, I mean, again, yeah, if we're talking about like availability for people and travel, just like not having one just out on the East Coast and having them
Right.
exist in these different places is going to allow potentially more feasibility for people too. So
And I think that is the hardest part of kind of translating the Tokyo Game Market experience to the US is that our country is so much larger. Like, Japan's just a much easier place to get around. And in the US, like, I think it's going to have to be kind of regional to keep it going. And hopefully people will still kind of travel around, so you don't just have like the California pocket and the New York pocket, right? Like, I hope that people, like Jonathan lives in California and he came out to Philadelphia to do it, which is great. I don't know if he'll ever be able to do it again. Like if, especially if other things pop up that are going to be easier for him to get to. So you, I don't know that we'll ever have like a really big show like Tokyo Game Market. But who knows? We'll see how this grows, right? It took a while for the Tokyo Game Market to grow to the size it is. So I'm not going to say it's never going to happen, but it could be tougher just with our national geography to make something like that really work. But who knows? We'll see.
Yeah, definitely like an exciting time to see them start popping up, and
Yeah, totally.
we'll just kind of, well, not will, I'm like, it will roll and we'll see. Okay, very cool. So, okay, our conversation just grew a lazy Susan, and I'm spinning the table over to you.
Okay.
Potentially, this is only potential. So what are some questions that you have for me, like maybe being like a vendor, first time designer, like at the event? Some things you might be curious about. Not necessarily even like me or my game, just like thoughts.
Oh man. Put me on the spot, Ryan. Yeah, I mean, we've talked a bit about how you set up your table and kind of your experience with worrying if things were going to sell or not. And it seems like you were pretty, you kind of like, if it does, it does. And if it doesn't, no big deal. I got to sell some, right? What do you think would be helpful for you on the vendor side that didn't happen this time around? I know we had the description up on the Indie Games Night Market site. But what else would have been helpful for you, I guess, just to feel more confident about how the show was going to go?
That's a good question. Yeah, like I didn't necessarily feel like I needed confidence. I had like a I just had a good feeling that things were going to be kind of crazy, like they were, in a good way, like good crazy.
I mean, you can say everything was perfect. You have no notes. It's fine.
I would not that every I there's This was probably like the most like minor thing that I saw. Obviously, all the stuff existed on the Indie Games Night Market like page on your site, and it had all the descriptions. So anything that was like there that I could have like put better, or like worded better, or had a better cover at the time, or anything like that would have been on me, which again is just like a personal thing, which is just good to know and learn from too. There was the PAX event list is crazy, right? I mean, you look at like what things are happening at PAX, and there's like a couple hundred little tabs on that schedule for like every single day.
Totally.
So I don't even know. Again, I don't even know if like the feedback would be for PAX. I ha haven't even looked at that schedule a bit, but like the little tab for Indie Games Night Market, I think basically just like routed it
Oh, to my page.
to your page,
Okay.
and they didn't really have. I mean, it's not like they would even had much like data to pull from. So for like if they wanted images, they couldn't have pulled for like images from the event because it never happened before. So yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious to see if PAX gives us a little more attention, like next time around, because it was such a big success, relatively speaking. Because they didn't really, it was just another event in their schedule. Like it wasn't something that they were super promoting or anything. I think it did get mentioned in one of their promotional emails, which was really cool. But again, because they didn't know what to expect, like they're not going to put a lot of time into it. But yeah, I'm curious to see if they give it any more play next time, knowing what the turnout was this year. That'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. So again, if like for me, it's not even like that's what I like wanted. It's just that like when my wife was asking questions, she's like, "Oh, like I'm on like the PAX site," and I'm like, "Okay, that's not really the site where you'd be getting this this information right now." Just again, not like a real criticism, but it's just kind of like it being the first thing is just like
Well, it's a funny situation, right? Because they're not running it themselves, really, but they are. Like they're the ones managing it, but I'm the one who organized it. So it's kind of this, and it's not like a PAX sponsored event, really. It's an event that's happening at PAX. So yeah, it's a little awkward, I think, to explain it to folks and for people to fully understand. Sorry about that. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, no, it's cool. And well, and for me, I mean, there's so many things that I was just kind of thinking about as like, first time designing something, first time like going to a convention in general.
Oh, really? That was your first show, like
was just
completely?
going to my first convention in
Oh,
general. And
wow. I didn't know that. That's wild.
yeah, that, and again, I'm not much of a like a city person
Okay.
necessarily, so in my mind, this is kind of one of the things that I talked about on the Bend reflection bit. Like,
Yeah.
I was a couple miles away from the convention center in an Airbnb,
Okay.
like 2 miles, like not a big deal. Like,
Yeah.
but there was literally no parking by the Airbnb. And when I
Yeah.
say like no parking, I mean, there was, if you could find a spot, it was 2 hour parking from like 8 a.m. to 2 a.m., which is
Jeez.
pointless. I mean, like
Yeah.
literally pointless.
Yeah.
So I, my travel there, I was hit by some storms in the Midwest on the way out because I drove,
Oh,
and
from
all the
Wisconsin, right?
from Wisconsin.
Oh, jeez.
So I have no real like I not have no real complaints. I have no complaints about how anything went. It was just like these
Bit of a
series of
trial to
events
get there. Yeah.
that just made me more anxious and like homesick than I thought I
Oh.
was going to be in the first place. But yeah, that's, I mean, honestly, that those were the things. And kind of like morning, the Saturday morning of, like the day before, because there's no parking, I just camped my car in a parking garage that was like a minute away. Then I paid for parking the whole weekend.
I did too. I mean, I actually wound up driving back and forth from Brooklyn. I did also have an Airbnb that was really close and again could not find any parking at all. And I just wound up like saying screw it and just drove back home. I was like, I'll sleep in my own bed. I don't care. I'll just throw them. Like, I paid for it already. I'm just gonna do it. But then yeah, I would pay for parking all day in the garage right across the street from the convention. So it was a little expensive on that front, but and time expensive. But yeah. I'm glad everything worked out for you and you got there okay. And like, that's awesome. I had no idea that was your first show at all. That's crazy. Did you spend much time at like the rest of the convention?
So yeah, so again, yeah, probably like again, the biggest like bummer would be I was just kind of like so uptight and worried about like logistical things and figuring those out that I didn't get to enjoy it as much.
Oh, that's too
But
bad.
I got to play one like really fun and pretty long game of Blood on the Clock Tower
Oh, sure.
that Anilin from Board Game Barrage podcast ran. So
Okay.
that was really slick that I got to partake. That was the only gaming I did, but
Oh,
I,
wow.
well, at the convention, Eric
Yeah.
and I played some games at the
Nice.
Airbnb, which is cool. And then, yeah, I just kind of went around, like looked at people doing stuff, chatted with people.
That's awesome. I mean, that's what I get out of it also, right? Like I walk through the vendor hall just to see what's being sold, but like my interests have strayed so far from like most of what's being sold there now. I think the only game I bought was the new Exit that I didn't have. And then I picked up a copy of Rainbow from the All Play booth, and that was really it. But yeah, cons are weird. I don't enjoy them as much as I used to. When I was a designer pitching, I felt like I had more to do while I was at conventions. Like I had business to conduct, so it felt more exciting. And now, like, I just kind of find a group of friends and sit and play weird trick-taking games. And, like, yeah, I don't know. It's fine.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I mean, like literally the number one thing I would change is I would just like learn from some of these things, be fine with parking my car right away, doing like a ride share, like or Uber or Lyft or whatever, and just kind of that's the way I'm gonna exist here and not have to like do that on the fly and account for that, after the fact. And then I would just be at the convention more and play more.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing that would have made my trip better. So
Well, that's awesome. It sounds like you had a good trip then.
yeah, no, it was good. I'm
That's cool.
glad I did it, and yeah, hopefully can make it happen again sometime in the future.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Cool. Well, let's get to just kind of, well, even though this is a slightly atypical thing, let's wrap up with a my my two final questions per usual. What's something that you've like watched, read, listened to, played that's been on your mind lately? A text of choice.
Oh, I've been reading a lot of comics lately. But one thing that I've kind of gotten into, I think because of my trips to Japan, is this manga called JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, which I had never, I'm not a big manga person, but I really like Junji Ito stuff. And I was reading a lot of Junji Ito stuff. And then when I was in Tokyo this last time, I was mentioning that I was reading the Junji Ito, and they started talking about JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, and there was some reference they made, and I was like, oh, well, maybe I should read it. So I've been kind of like trying to get through that. It's really weird, but I'm enjoying it, like just the bizarreness of it. It's well named. But that's probably what's been taking most of my time. I don't want to tell you what I've been watching. It's kind of embarrassing. I've been getting into like really dumb Netflix reality dating shows. Just to like, I have a lot of time to fill, like while I'm doing other things, and I'll just put them on. They're easy, just kind of like, okay. You get kind of sucked into the human drama of it, and you get to judge people. It's, yeah. So, been a lot of that.
There, I mean, that's really a thing. I mean, it winds up being kind of like that perfect. I can watch when I want. I can check out when I want, and like literally the ultimate like background show.
Totally. But then to balance that, I go to the movies a lot, and there's been a bunch of stuff from A24 recently, which has been awesome. Like, I'll go see anything from A24. So I saw Y2K, which was very silly and fun, and then I saw Queer, which was also like really, really good. But and there's like a couple more coming, like Nosferatu's coming out very soon, and I just got tickets for Baby Girl next week, which I think those are both, at least one of those is A24. I don't remember if Nosferatu is or not, but like they've just been killing it lately. So that's how I balance out the dumb Netflix reality shows, by going to see challenging cinema.
And then when the challenging cinema gives you like existential crises, then you go back to
Well, time for more ultimatum, marry or move on. That's, yeah,
the
palate cleanser. So
That's awesome.
I have many sides to me, Ryan. That's what I'm trying to say.
Hey, that's what I appreciate, you know.
Yeah.
Awesome. We like before we got on, we chatted about the fact that kind of your fall pre-orders wound up just getting delivered, and I know that there are games open for sale on the new mill site right now, but you also have at least a trio of some climbing games coming as well.
Yeah. So February 1st is our next kind of pre-order cycle beginning. There are three two-player odd climbing shedding games. Dickory by Sean Ross and Hannibal Sondregger. Greasy Spoon, also by Sean Ross, and Lepidoptery by Srinivas. Oh God, I'm gonna mispronounce his name. Hold on, let me double check. I don't want to get it wrong. Vasudevan and David Koresh. And then we're also there's going to be a little dog release of Dino Tricks Tarot Adventures by DJ Kennel with art by Sai Beppu, which is very exciting. DJ is the designer of Naughty Gnomes, which was one of our February games last year. So that's going to be super cool. And yeah, all four of those are going to be up for pre-order February 1st. And we have plenty of games from the last year that are still available. We just sold out of the Six of Eight and Naughty Gnomes, actually, which was super cool. There are still copies available at a couple of retailers who buy from me, like Tricky Imports and travelgames.co.uk. Definitely have those coming. May have already gotten them, actually. Shipping is very fast right now for some reason. But yeah, a lot of cool stuff on the website, and more coming.
Very neat. So again, the two most recent like design releases from you would have been Agency and Gachapon
Yeah.
Trick. Anything else that you can or want to shout out or?
I mean, I'm working on a new design, Woodlanders, which I have started to show to a publisher. I'm actually we're gonna do a full play next month. And if they don't want to do it, I'll do it myself, next fall. It's a trick-taking climbing hybrid-ish, with cards, that are only suits. There are no numbers on them, and you're playing multiples of them to win tricks. But that one's still kind of, work in progress. But yeah, I think that's probably about it. I'm going back to Japan in May, so that'll be exciting. Have more stuff to bring back after that. But yeah, that about covers it.
That's about it. Like, or like a handful of games that you just released, and four
Isn't that
more that are
enough for you,
coming out.
Ryan?
And
Haven't I given you enough? All
I'll allow it just this time. And
right.
on top of that, you've have given me more than enough. This episode, I think, if I'm like doing math right, it's probably about like 1 hour and 15 minutes, which is
Yeah.
less than my ramble,
Oh,
probably
good.
like 25% of my words that I had in that one too. So
Okay.
I couldn't be more appreciative that this is what's going to exist in the world instead of that. So,
Awesome. I hope folks enjoy it.
yeah,
And then,
I
yeah, when we've confirmed for Indie Games Night Market at PAX Unplugged next November. It'll be November 22nd. Same spot, same time, 7 o'clock in the Q Hall. And hopefully much larger. That's all going to depend on who applies. And we'll probably start that process again early, late June, late spring, early summer. We'll see. But yeah, excited to do it again.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for setting that up, kind of forcing my hand to finish that design and just do it,
Yeah, awesome.
and having like a grand life experience, like for real.
I'm really happy that it was able to do that for you. That was my hope, that it would get folks like you to kind of just get their stuff out there. So it's awesome.
Well, thank you for chatting, and
Yeah, of
I hope
course.
you have a great holiday season.
Yeah, you too. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Intertextual Cardboard Experience, the most independent, seriously, though, podcast about board games and any other text that they connect to. Thank you so much for choosing to spend your time here. Any further support, such as sharing the show with friends, following the page's socials in the episode description, writing a review, filling out the feedback form, or doing anything else you can think of is greatly appreciated. Keep playing, watching, reading, listening, experiencing.